I'm Emily Alphen Johnson, VPR Digital Producer. Your time is valuable, so we've edited this episode for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. It's been almost a week since U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced the Trump administration's plans to do away with a program that protects people who were brought to the U.S. as children and are in the United States without legal papers. These people are often called Dreamers. Sessions said DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, will be rescinded in 6 months, giving Congress some time to come up with a legislative solution should they choose to do so. Almost immediately, states began challenging the administration's decision. On Wednesday, the attorneys general from 15 states and the District of Columbia filed suit to prevent the termination of DACA. Since then, the University of California system has sued, and the California attorney general is expected to make an announcement today about another lawsuit. Vermont was among that original group of states judging the president's actions unconstitutional. Here to talk with us today about his decision to join on behalf of Vermonters is the state's attorney general, T.J. Dunneman. Nice to have you back on the program.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
Why did you join the lawsuit?
Well, we made an agreement with these Dreamers, about 800,000 in this country, 42 here in our state of Vermont. And the deal was this: work hard, play by the rules, you're going to have the opportunity for the American dream. This is what this country is all about. We took their information, we created a registry, and we gave them a path, really, towards citizenship in terms of that deferred action, if you will.
Let's be clear. It was never a path to citizenship in terms of the program itself being a way to gain citizenship.
They deferred the action on deportation. The hope was, obviously, that if you continue to do well, you don't get into trouble, you work hard, you pay your taxes. I think eventually we would have got there. But you're right, Jane. But here's the point. We pulled the rug out from under these folks. And that, I think, is something that we don't do as a country. We made a promise. We shouldn't be doing business this way. And when you look at it from a constitutional perspective, you're really looking at two issues. Number one, this issue of due process, what is essentially fundamental fairness, what the government engages in, we need to be fundamentally fair, as well as a violation of the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. And basically, that's very similar to the so-called travel ban case in which a number of states, including Vermont, challenged President Trump's executive order in terms of limiting immigration from certain countries, from folks from certain countries. And basically, what that says is this. Number one, we recognize that the president has authority to issue into these executive orders. We don't dispute that. But when the underlying reason for some of these orders is based on animus towards certain groups of people based on their nationality or ethnicity, that then turns that executive order into an unconstitutional order. You saw that with the travel ban, with the rhetoric about Muslims. And unfortunately, you're seeing it here, in my belief, in regards to the Dreamers, because number one, 78% of them are of Mexican descent. Over 90% of them are Latino. And the rhetoric that we heard from on the campaign, and here's the thing, you cannot distinguish between what you hear on the campaign to how you govern, was this animus towards Mexicans. And so we think that it's unconstitutional. We think that Congress should act. I do agree with President Trump. I do hope Congress does act and provides some clarity on this issue. But if they're not, we're certainly going to challenge this order because I think we made a deal with these Dreamers. We said, hey, listen, work hard, play by the rules, and you get the opportunity for the American dream. That's something that was given to me, it was given to you, it was given to everybody, and that's the promise of this country. And I feel very strongly about that, and I'm proud to stand in defense of these 42 Dreamers here in our state.
There's a third part of the lawsuit as well, Attorney General, that says that states will be harmed by rescinding DACA. Vermont is known to have 42 Dreamers. These are people who are part of the DACA program. Is Vermont really financially or otherwise going to be harmed by this program ending?
Sure. These people work. they pay their taxes. That's revenue to the state. So there is an economic harm argument. And that's why I think you do see some big companies like Apple getting involved and standing in solidarity with the attorney's general's lawsuit against the rescission order and saying this is an economic harm argument because these folks work hard. They pay their taxes. They work for companies. They're good citizens. They're good folks in our community who are productive members of our community. So that economic harm argument, absolutely.
Push you on that because sure. You know, there are times where companies lay off more than 42 workers at any yep. given time. Or you know, I was looking for some census statistics today, and it looks like maybe in 2016, Vermont's population actually dropped by 1,000 people. So it's not like, and I say this with full understanding that for people who are affected, this is real, this is their lives, and that's not the argument I'm talking about here. But when you talk about the state impact,
sure,
42 people, a lot of things happen to 42 people in the state of Vermont that the state is not suing over or taking action over.
But this is a government action, Jane, which triggers this constitutional analysis. And I got to tell you, whether it's one person who I think is being treated unfairly, I think it's an obligation of the state of Vermont to stand in defense of them. And so whether it's one or whether it's 42 or whether it's 1,000, I'm going to do what I think is right. And I do believe these folks provide a benefit, an economic benefit to our state, to our country. Many of them work, as you said earlier in your introduction, you're seeing universities getting involved. Many are in school. And listen, here's the other thing at a very fundamental level about this case. When these folks came here, they were kids. They were children. They didn't make this decision. They came with their parents. And since when do we hold people accountable for the decisions of their parents? They came here because they were brought here by their parents. And many of them have done exceedingly well. They have done what we've asked them, what is to work hard, to play by the rules, to contribute to our community. I think they should be given an opportunity. And I do, as I said earlier, I agree with President Trump. Congress has to act and has to get this right. You know, if they don't, we're going to sue. Now, I think there was a study, that same study that said there was 42 Dreamers here in our state, and the economic benefit was ballpark, I think, $2 million. So they do provide a benefit. We're a small state. We need every cent we can get in terms of people paying their taxes. And this is something that I think when we talk about this legal issue of standing, it really is harm to the state. And I think there is economic harm with this order rescinding DACA.
We got a note from Doc2222 who says, well, good. It's nice to see people willing to stand up to Trump. His DACA decision is the meanest thing this country has done since the internment of the Japanese during World War II. In response to that, Alpha16 says, the meanest thing since the Japanese internment was Barack Obama issuing an executive order, now known as DACA, when he knew that it didn't have the authority to do it. He gave the individuals a false sense of security. What Trump has actually done is put Congress on notice that they must do their job and make a decision on DACA in the next 6 months or face the people who elected them. That's a good thing, right? The state's attorneys general are just posturing for the benefit of the media. They know that President Trump has no more constitutional authority to install DACA than Barack Obama did. What do you think about that?
Well, as I said, I think Congress should act. I think part of the problem is Congress, the congressional inaction on immigration reform. We're a nation of immigrants. I think we need to have immigration reform, and I think we do have to provide a path to citizenship for a lot of these folks. My grandparents were immigrants, and I think, look, we all come from somewhere else. It's just a question of how far back do you go? And I think we have to remember our history when we're engaging in these debates today, because, as I said, we are a nation of immigrants. Now, in regards to this, so I do think Congress should act, but in this issue of executive order, look, the president has authority to make executive decisions and to have executive orders. But if the underlying reason, again, is unconstitutional, if there's an animus demonstrated to a certain class of people based on their nationality, their ethnicity, in my opinion, that renders it unconstitutional because it's going to violate the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. You also have this due process argument of what our government engages in when our government makes a decision and engages in business. It's got to be fundamentally fair. And when we've said to people, because we did say to these people, Jane, sign up. We created a registry of these people. We know who they are. And then to say a couple years after the fact, oh, by the way, that deal's gone. We know who you are. We know what you look like. We know where you live. And we're kicking you out. That is fundamentally unfair. These folks are trying to do the right thing. This is a benefit to the state of Vermont. It's going to be a benefit to our country. We need to stand in defense of these folks, and we need to challenge this order when we think it is unconstitutional. All that being said, I do agree, I think, with the listener that wrote in. I do think Congress should act on this issue. We need Congress to act. This idea that we're getting nothing done because we're so divided in this country, frankly, has to stop. But because of that, Jane, what you're seeing really is this kind of new federalism where if you're saying the federal government isn't going to defend its citizens or people that live in this country, if the federal government isn't going to protect our environment, if the federal government isn't going to protect consumers, well, guess what? The states will, and the states will through their attorney general.
You know, President Obama announced DACA as an executive order because Congress wouldn't act. Do you have hope that Congress actually will take action on this within the next 6 months? And if they do, what happens to the lawsuit?
Well, I do have hope that they're going to act in the next 6 months, and I agree. I mean, I like the idea of a deadline because we can't kick the can down the road any longer here. And the early word, and you know, I got to say, you know, we have inaction from Congress. We have this order. We then have a tweet by the president seemingly undercutting the order. Then you have statements, I think, by Speaker Ryan telling that the Dreamers should rest easy. And my point is, well, let's get it done.
But can you have it both ways? I mean, if President Trump had not put a deadline on it, had not said, I'm rescinding this in 6 months, take action, what kind of initiative would Congress have taken on this? You know, it already hasn't taken action on this issue, this particular immigration issue or others. So, you know, it sounds like you want it both ways. You both want Congress to take action, but you don't want President Trump to be putting this deadline on it. And in fact, you and the other attorneys general have sued the day after Trump's announcement while you're now saying, you know, we hope Congress takes action in 6 months.
Well, look, they're based on their track record, I don't think anybody has a lot of trust in Congress getting it done. It's my hope they get it done. I do think that deadline's a good thing. But absolutely, I make no apologies for filing suit. This is about protecting people, and this is about keeping pressure on. And listen, when we're talking about discrimination, when we're talking about hate, when we're talking about what happened in Charlottesville, when we're talking about the transgender ban in the military, when we're talking about the travel ban, when we're talking about Dreamers, we can't be silent. We can't allow inaction to be the cause of the day, because when you're silent, that normalizes this type of discrimination and heat and hate, and it allows a foothold to be taken. And you need to act. You need to speak out against these actions. And that's what I'm doing.
Today, we're hearing from Vermont Attorney General T.J. Donovan on why he joined the multi-state lawsuit challenging the Trump administration's plan to revoke DACA, the program that allows young undocumented immigrants to stay in the United States legally. We're also going to look at a massive data breach that AGs all around the country have had to get up to speed on very quickly. We got a question for you, TJ Donovan, from Mark, who says, Obama previously said that blanket deferrals were unconstitutional. A majority of states are suing that DACA is unconstitutional, and the U.S. AG has also said it's unconstitutional. Why is rescinding an executive action to push Congress for a law wrong?
Well, again, the underlying reason, in my opinion, is what renders the executive order unconstitutional. Jane, I'm not saying the president doesn't have the authority to make an executive order on this issue. What we're saying is the underlying reason for the order, in our opinion, renders it unconstitutional. When you look at the rhetoric, again, which I think demonstrates an animus towards a certain group of people, that raises the question whether or not the Equal Protection Clause, and listen, if you're in this country, if you are within the boundaries of the United States, here's the thing. The Constitution applies to you. It doesn't matter if you're Mexican or not. If you're in our country, you have constitutional protection, which means that you're protected by the 14th Amendment, which means that you have equal protection under the law. And when you have these orders, and the underlying reason, again, is that animus, which raises the question. We can go back to some of the rhetoric on the campaign, whether it's questioning whether or not a judge of Mexican dissent is qualified to be a judge, whether it's talking, making statements that Mexicans are criminals, whether it's talking about the issue of the border. All these raise questions into whether or not equal protection is being violated. And that alone, in addition to the due process argument that when our government makes a decision, when it acts, it has to be fundamentally fair. And this is where we've said to folks under President Obama, sign up. We're going to defer an action for you. We're going to collect all your data. We're going to put you in a registry. And then to pull the rug out from them. This really gets to, in my opinion, pulling the American dream away from these folks because we held it out to them, Jane. We held it out to them. And we did say, work hard, play by the rules, don't have a criminal record. We're going to work with you. We're going to defer action in terms of initiating deportation hearings. And this really was, I think, taking away the American dream that we held out the promise to. And that's what I find so objectionable on this.
Let's go to Rich, who's calling in from North Ferrisburg. Hi, Rich. Go right ahead.
Hi, TJ. How are you?
Good, Rich. How are you? Thanks for calling in.
Pretty good. Yeah, well, you talk about these DACA kids like they're all doctors or something. I mean, you say they're all hardworking and they're all paying their taxes. Well, do you have any numbers on that?
Well, I think the numbers do support that in terms of the revenue to the state, which again was about $2 million. The same study that identified the 42 DACA recipients in our state, and I think overall, based in the country, the report did say that most of these folks are engaged in school, are in our are serving in our military, are tax paying, productive members of our community. They're doing the right thing. They're doing the right thing. And when you hold out the promise of the American dream, which I think our country did, I don't think we can just breach that promise and walk away from them, Rich. And look, there was rules here. He said, you can't have a criminal record. You know, we set the bar pretty high with a lot of these folks in order to stay in this country. And for me, again, when you talk about that due process issue, about fundamental fairness, how do we say to a group of people, hey, listen, sign up, put your name on this list, give us all your information, we're going to monitor you, and we're going to defer action from taking action against you if you do the right thing, if you work hard, if you play by the rules. For me, that means the American dream, the hope and the offer of the American dream. And then 5 years later, to say to these same folks, the deal's off, we're pulling the rug out from under you. For me, that is fundamentally unfair, and this order should be questioned.
Let's also remind Rich that my understanding of Dreamers is that they're not allowed to take some of the social safety net services
sure,
that are available
right.
only to United States citizens. They're also, they're registered, so people know where they are. The federal government knows where they are in terms of tax collection.
Absolutely.
Let's go to Anne calling in from Essex Junction. Hi, Anne. You're on.
Hi. Thanks very much for taking my call. My point on this is I look around the economy of Chittenden County, centrally Burlington, and it seems to be very robust. And I think in large part that, or in great part, that's due to the immigrant population that we have, the small businesses that they start, the fact that they hire a lot of people creating jobs. And so it rather than the comments that have been made that these are people, young people who take away jobs from, quote, American citizens, I find the opposite to be true. I also think that throwing the issue back to Congress is not a bad idea. I wish that President Trump had found a way to do it that did not throw the DACA people into a turmoil about their future and any decisions they might be making now, not knowing what's coming up for them. I'm also like to make a comment that I think we're very fortunate to have Attorney Donovan serving our state, and I'm very proud to say that he is our Attorney General.
Ann, thanks for your comments. Let me ask you a question. When you talk about, you look around Chittenden County and you see the impact of immigration and of immigrants and a robust economy, when you think about issues of legal immigration and illegal immigration, how do you fall? What do you think the right approach should be for people who are in the country without legal papers? How would you address that issue?
How would I address
that? Yeah, what do you think about that?
I think that to stand on the ceremony and just say it's completely black or white, you either are here legally or you are not here illegally, and if you are not here legally, out you go, is totally the wrong approach. If these are people who are contributing to our society in any way, they don't have to be doctors, like the previous caller says. I think having a blue-collar job, paying your taxes, contributing in any way to our society in a positive way, creating jobs for other people. And if they have been here and they are, you know, upstanding citizens, that's what we want in this country.
And I hear you. Thank you for that comment. Appreciate your thoughts. Let's get a few more in here. Rachel says, a tremendous thanks to Mr. Donovan for resisting Trump. It's all too easy to feel hopeless these days. But many fine representatives and judges and attorneys general across our land keep giving me hope in small and large ways that Trump and company cannot march forward in smooth, unhindered fashion. We must all stand in the way of hate and ignorance, as it is not the American way. It is not what our democracy was built to be. And citizens, too, like those who protested in Boston a few weeks back, can show the way forward. Resist in small and large ways. But Jonathan says, so enforcing the law is illegal? This is small state grandstanding for 42 people when we're on the opposite border and Vermont has more pressing issues. Illegal immigration is not legal immigration. It's frankly laughable and sad that there's an emotional aspect to this. Parents made the choice to bring their kids. The parents knew that this would be a problem for their kids. And from folks who are proponents of the right to choose, the parents are to blame. So that's what Jonathan is thinking. But T.J. Donovan, let me ask you, you know, you are the attorney general. You're the state's highest law enforcement officer. Critics of DACA says it erodes basic respect for the rule of law because we're basically creating a workaround for our immigration laws. So what do you think as the top law enforcement officer in the state?
I think our immigration system's broken. I think this country was founded on immigration. As I said, my grandparents were immigrants. I think immigrants are good for economic development. I think Ann is absolutely right. I grew up in the city of Burlington. You go down North Street in Burlington. 20 years ago, that street was dead. Now it is a thriving, vibrant business district, mostly of immigrant businesses.
But mostly of immigrant businesses, many of them coming in as refugees through legal immigration channels. Do you not make a distinction?
We can make a distinction, but the fact of the matter is that we had a policy for those refugees to come in to our country. And I think the more important question is, I think it was Jonathan who said, blame the parents. Well, that's fine. We can blame the parents. But let's go one step further and ask, why were they leaving their country? They were leaving their country because they sought a better life for their children in this country. That is the dream and the promise of America. And we can, if we lose sight of that, we're going to have a lot of trouble in this country. And I believe that we can have immigration reform. People, you talk about these dreamers in this country. I do believe in creating a path of citizenship. I do believe in personal responsibility. I do believe in consequence. But we got to be honest about it. These folks are in this country. Let's create a system that gives them a path towards citizenship. Let them exercise and demonstrate their personal responsibility by working hard, by playing by the rules, by paying their taxes, by serving in our military. Let me ask this question. How does that hurt our country if people are working, paying their taxes, serving our military to protect us? How does that hurt us? Let's put the political rhetoric to the side and let's actually create a system that works. Look, we don't want criminals. We don't want terrorists. I'm fine checking, vetting people coming into this country. I'm fine with that. But listen, our history of this country of over 200 years has been one of immigration, which has made us stronger, which has grown our economy. And we have to continue to look towards our history, to look towards our tradition, to remember our values and make sure that we have an immigration system that works. Hey, listen, border security is different than immigration, okay? I believe in protecting our borders. I believe in not letting terrorists into this country. I believe in protecting the national security of this country and the state of Vermont. But I don't believe saying no to people who come here who are seeking a better life for their children. That's what this country's about.
I want to have a couple minutes to talk about Equifax, this giant data breach. But let me ask you two very quick questions. One of which is, after the announcement by Jeff Sessions last week, Governor Scott expressed support for the Dreamers. And he said he would be talking talking to you and looking to you for advice on how we move forward with joining the lawsuit or not. Obviously, you did. Did you talk to the governor and come up with an agreement prior to joining the suit, or did you make this decision without his input or without his support?
Well, I know that members of my staff were always in contact with the governor's staff, and Governor Scott has been, I think, an exceptional leader on this issue. He was out front early and often against President Trump's travel ban, and again indicating his opposition to the rescission of DACA. So I commend Governor Scott for his leadership.
That's not an answer to the question, though. You and he did not coordinate.
Our staff spoke, but this was my decision. And I'm sure if I talked to him, he would be in agreement with it, because he has been in agreement with him. So I'm glad for his leadership, and I appreciate his support.
And then just very quickly, what do you think that the chances of this lawsuit prevailing are?
Well, we'll see. You know, we'll go through the process, and, you know, you'll have the parallel congressional track. Again, I think that 6-month deadline is a good idea, frankly, by President Trump. I agree with him. I hope Congress acts. Now, whether or not they don't, we're going to continue to do our jobs. As I said, when the federal government fails to protect the folks that are in this country, you're going to see states step up through their attorneys generals to protect the folks that live in their states.
We're talking with TJ Donovan, and we're going to spend the last 5 minutes of this segment talking about the Equifax data breach. We know it has affected millions of Americans, and it's been kind of a fast-moving story in that people weren't exactly sure what they should be doing to try to protect themselves, to even figure out if they were among the individuals affected. Attorney General Donovan sent out a flash alert on Friday, but it sounds like that's even been, you know, confusing about what the right advice is for Americans. So let's talk a little bit about that. What's the latest that you know of?
Well, the latest is, number one, this is a big issue, Jane, as you said. Over 240,000 Vermonters are likely affected by this data breach by Equifax. A couple things Vermonters can do right now. They can go to Equifax's website. The language that we objected to earlier in the week, which essentially demanded that customers waive certain legal rights, has been taken down.
Equifax clarified last night, saying first they had said, look, it doesn't apply. It's okay. You'll be fine. And then they actually further clarified and took that language out to say anybody who signs up to see if they have been affected, the idea was that possibly they would not be allowed to join legal action. And now it's clear there is no barrier to legal action.
That's right. They've taken that down. So there's no waiver of legal rights if anybody goes to their site. Equifax is offering 1-year free credit monitoring. Whether or not Vermonters avail themselves or not, that's their decision. But certainly that is being offered from Equifax. But the thing that Vermonters can do really is to check their credit reports for any unauthorized activity. You can do that by going to any one of the three credit reporting agencies. And in Vermont, this is a good point, you get one free credit report per year. So this should not cost Vermonters any money to get a credit report. You can go online at annualcreditreport.com and I believe get your credit report that way. And what you're looking for, obviously, is any questionable or suspicious activity where somebody may be getting, you know, a credit card in your name, because, you know, this is the information, the data that was breached, you know, includes names, social security numbers, addresses, some cases credit card numbers and driver license numbers. So I'm not saying this to panic folks, but people should be vigilant. People should check their bank accounts and their credit card statements for any unusual or unauthorized activity and get that credit report. And whether or not you choose to freeze your credit report so nobody can access it to get a credit card, something that folks should consider. We have a lot of other information, helpful information at our website, which is consumer.vermont.gov, consumer.vermont.gov. Vermont is spelled out. And we have some helpful steps that Vermonters can take to protect themselves. But this is an issue that I think really underscores the need to make sure that we're doing everything we can to protect Vermonters. And that's giving people information to make the best decision for their financial safety. Because this is, look, this is over a third of our state that is likely affected. But we did make some progress over the weekend with Equifax in terms of taking down that language.
You know, also Equifax is sending
out... I want to say, Jane, I apologize.
Let me just say, Equifax is also going to be sending out letters to anybody who's affected. So even if you do nothing, if you are affected, you should be getting a letter from Equifax. Go ahead.
Well, that's a good point, because what I was going to say is there's now another scam going on out there, and it's a phishing scam, purportedly an email from Equifax. So do not click on the links. If you get an email from Equifax, be careful that it may be a phishing scam. Don't click on the link in the email. So again, scrutinize that email. If it's from Equifax, there is a phishing scam. My recommendation today, this is a fast-moving story, Jane, as you indicated, don't click on the link in the email. I think the letter, if you're affected, you are going to get that letter. Let's wait for the letter. In the meantime, you can check your bank accounts. You can check your credit card. You can get that credit report. You're entitled to one free credit report under Vermont law to determine whether or not there's any suspicious activity.
Can I ask you one last question here?
Sure.
Under Vermont's Security Breach Notice Act, businesses are required to notify the Attorney General within 14 days of discovering or finding out that they've had a breach. Did Equifax fall afoul of that by not immediately notifying you or others of the breach, which happened over a month ago at the end of July, and they may have known about it sooner than now?
Let me say this, Jane. It doesn't appear at this time that Equifax complied with Vermont law, which is to notify us within 14 days. Again, the importance of that is that allows us to get the word out to Vermonters, which we rushed to do on Friday, issuing, as you said, this scam alert and a press release and getting the word out to thousands of Vermonters. So it goes without saying that we are in an active investigation on this, and we are going to do everything we can to protect Vermonters' financial security and their financial health. I mean, this should not be happening. That is why we have one of the strongest laws in the nation, so we can alert the Vermont consumer that their money may be at risk here. And we're not going to fool around when we're talking about Vermonters' money. We're going to do everything we can to protect Vermonters and their financial health.
That's TJ Denovan, Vermont's Attorney General. Thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Jane.